Tri-State Viewpoint. To join the program, call 304-399-8255 or toll free at 877-420-8255. Now, from the Kindred Capital Building in Huntington, Gene Dean and Bobby Nelson.
Hey, welcome to Tri-State Viewpoint, where the Tri-State comes together to talk 5 days a week right here at 555 Fifth Avenue. And I'm sitting here with my lovely co-host and friend,
Oh,
Jim
my
Dean,
goodness, one of those days.
Who, getting toward the end of the week, I might need some money. Anyway, she has a special guest. We both know him, but
many of our listeners will know. Our guest today is the Huntington City Council Chairman, Mark Bates.
Good to be here.
Well, I'm so glad that you are, and there's always a lot of things to talk about what's going on in City Council, mm-hmm. and the one that actually is causing me the most amusement now, although it's not a funny topic, is whether or not we should have an urban deer hunt. Now,
right.
I don't think I've ever seen a deer in the city limits, but...
Really? Well, you just need to come a couple blocks over near where I live, and you'll
find
a few.
Okay.
I was approached back in the spring by the Inwood Garden Club, and they had expressed an interest in the city looking into an urban hunt. For the reason that the flowers and the grass and the feces and the problems and the disease that mm-hmm. they cause, and that the neighborhood up there is pretty much inundated with deer. Mm.
That would be up close to the museum then, right?
Near the museum, mm-hmm. Exactly. And so, anyhow, I was told by the DNR official that had attended that meeting that, you know, we were too late to get it done this year, but we would need to, you know, look into it for next year.
Mm. We have to get state permission then,
right.
Is that right?
Right.
Okay. I guess it's not a funny topic. It's just that I kind of get visions of Robin Hood and
right.
bows and arrows.
Well, and you know, at the work session 2 weeks ago, I brought it up, and it did stir some interesting comments. And then there have been some concerns that folks think that we're just going to have people roaming around with a gun or a bow and
mm-hmm.
arrow and just killing deer, you know, in plain sight.
And other animals and people if
right,
they happen to get
right.
in the way.
But that's not the case at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's very structured. And actually, Charleston has a urban hunt, and it's very, very, very restrictive.
Mm.
And in most cases, the folks that do the hunting are your first responders, your fire police.
Not just citizens in the neighborhood.
Not just citizens in the neighborhood.
Although anyone could.
Right.
Yeah.
But you got to be ordinance.
Watch out.
You enact an ordinance.
Right.
That brings up a point that I'd like to... If you enact an ordinance, incidentally, I don't support that. Although I don't vote over there, if you bring up the ordinance and were to enact it, it would you cannot restrict it to certain parts of the city, right? It would have to be. I don't know that you can say you can only do this in this part of
From,
the city.
I did not get to attend the public safety meeting yesterday, but I did watch as much of it at my office as I could,
mm-hmm.
and apparently from the statement that the DNR official made, which I'll get a report on this at our work session here at 4 o'clock, is that a garden club or a group, a neighborhood group, could make application to do it. So, but it would still have to have the city council's approval.
Now you're
approval.
Making it even funnier, the thought of all the little garden club ladies, and I know I'm making enemies when I say that, but running around with their bows and arrows.
I think the people proposing this, including the little ladies at the garden club, would have to be the only ones that could shoot the archery, not the deer.
Right.
But you didn't answer my question. You can't. It's like special legislation in Charleston. You can't affect.
Well, I believe that Charleston's ordinance was enacted under home rule,
mm-hmm.
if
mm-hmm.
I'm not mistaken.
Well, you could tie it into the zoning ordinance, couldn't you? Certain zones would be allowed. I mean, the business downtown zone, obviously.
I think you set a bounds, like it has to be the acreage has to be so much. and that there can only be so many hunters on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm just talking about the reach of an ordinance. When you enact a municipal ordinance.
Yeah, I know.
I know that you have state authority for zoning, so I don't know about that. The other question I would raise, what would the deer say if the humans invaded their territory?
I think we already have.
I think we have.
That's why they're getting desperate. They're trying to fight back.
Well, you know, part of the problem, too, is, I mean, most folks are animal lovers, and, you know, mm-hmm. they see a pretty deer out in the yard or whatever, and maybe they put scraps or food out for it, and that's really causing the problem. Mm-hmm. You know, if they didn't have the food source, they would go somewhere else,
right.
maybe. So that may be something that we look into as far as ordinances, as far as feeding wild animals. The DNR official did say to make sure you don't exclude birds, you know, because you have to be able to feed the birds and whatnot.
Yeah, I think preventive measures, you know, like a program about make sure you don't leave scraps out, that you don't feed deer, that mm-hmm. you get to cover up your garbage. And I'm like, now, Barbersville has it,
mm-hmm.
and South Charleston and Charleston, I believe, but the and it's something that is a little bit of a problem because I read somewhere for many years ago we didn't have any deer in West Virginia. We had a coyote or certain types of other. It's no longer found here, but all of a sudden the deer population keeps growing.
Really,
but I understand
increased.
Statewide it's declining now. It's kind of peaked. It's going down the other way. So. Mm-hmm. It's good for discussion, but I'm not sold on it yet as a way to resort to arms to get rid of something.
Sure, I understand. And the whole point was to bring up the discussion. Yeah. And as I stressed to my fellow council members, you know, that the group did at least deserve or should be entitled to a public hearing.
Yeah,
and
but it's not on the agenda for Monday night.
No,
it's
not on the agenda. It's,
and you can't do anything till next year anyway. So
right,
but
mm-hmm.
you can have these educational thing maybe
right.
as a hearing. Yes,
exactly.
And I think that's very democratic of the
absolutely.
That's with a small D there.
Just hope that somebody doesn't lead a deer in there to plead its case.
If they were in the middle of the hearing and somebody dressed up like a deer pranced in. What about Rudolph? What about the kids?
I know.
I think that we better take a break here.
Okay, let's lope right into a break.
Okay. This is Tri-State Viewpoint with Bobby Nelson and Gene Dean, and our guest today is the chairman of Huntington City Council, Mark Bates. And we will take a short commercial break here, and then we'll be back with you on Super Talk 94.1 FM at AM 930. And if you want to weigh in on the deer topic or any other topic, please give us a call. We're at 304-399-8255 or 1-877-420-8255.
This is Tri-State Viewpoint on Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
Welcome back to Tri-State Viewpoint. Our guest is the chairman of the Huntington City Council, the Honorable Mark Bates, who will be seeking re-election in a couple of years and has his eye on being mayor someday. Anyway, we have a caller on the line. I believe we have a guy named Dennis. Dennis, hey, Dennis, welcome to Tri-State Viewpoint. Do you like to have a question for the council chairman?
No, I have an anecdote, I guess, what you call it.
Okay.
I served on Huntington. And I was on the police department, and I'm a retired sergeant, and I can remember around 1989 or 90, we kept getting calls about a bear on over by the train engine and down through there. And anyway, we kept sending cars to check on it, and they wouldn't find it. Finally, around dusk, I drove out through there, and just as I was going down the bank there, but it was on the James River Road.
Mm-hmm.
By the bank there at near the Spring Valley Bridge, this black bear walked across the road and kind of slowed up to look out on the railroad tracks. And I marked out with it, and, it was starting to get dark, and I was concerned. I got out, and I got my shotgun out because I figured, well, I could hit him better than that dump on butt. I found out those things don't reflect much light, and you can't see them after dark. Anyway, it kind of circled me once, and when I jacked one up, a shell up in the gun, it knew that that wasn't good. It took off running, and it ran over and jumped the fence. It was on the Kellogg playground, wow. Kellogg School playground. And we tried to keep it in there until we could get DNR down there to shoot it with one of those pellets.
Mm-hmm.
But kids were aware of it. They were down there yelling and screaming, carrying on. The bear got all upset, jumped the fence. Of course, we all scattered.
It's our law enforcement at work.
It went back towards the railroad track, and later on that night, it tried to cross the interstate, and 18 wheeler killed it.
Oh wow!
So, what do you think about shooting deer with a bow and arrow? Should we be doing that in the city?
Probably. You know, every vehicle I have has a mirror broke or something because of the deer. You know, I've read somewhere where there's large herds that run in these big cities. They're nocturnal animals, so they stay asleep for the day under shrubs and stuff around these industrial parks, camps where you've got factories and the like, and they're out of the night, and people pay high premiums for tree insurance all over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's true.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate your calling, especially the anecdote about the bear. Thank you, Dennis. Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's a different animal, but still.
I think I'd be more scared of a bear than a deer.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Well, listen, change the subject a little bit here. Because of the imposition of sales tax and a little more efficiency and oversight by council,
mm-hmm.
And the mayor working together, the city finished last year in the black, has a little surplus of running ahead this year.
Mm-hmm.
But I notice coming up next council session, you have a budget revision on the agenda. It looked to me, I think it's the third one since the new budget mm-hmm. went in effect in July. Why is that?
Well, you set your budget in... the mayor brings us an actual budget by February 15th, and then that's on projections of expenses.
That's last February for the budget that went
correct.
In effect July 1 of this year.
Right. Okay. And so then you have your previous fiscal year that you're in, so you have to make adjustments because you have to, if your income, obviously if your income is more, you need to show that it's coming in more. Or if your expenses are a little high, you've got to make your adjustments. And the auditor's office requires these budget revisions as you go to do that. Or if the administration comes to council and says, we'd like to move another $200,000 from this department to street paving, that would require an action of council to do that because they can move monies around within the budget of each department, but they can't move them from one department to another. So we would have to approve, to do that.
Yeah. What on the on the budget revision for next Monday's council meeting? What are you revising?
Well, I haven't made it to chambers yet, and so the paperwork just arrived last night, and so I'll have that at the work session here shortly.
That's
so I'm
at
not
4 o'clock, isn't it?
Right, it's at 4 o'clock, so I'll know a little better once I get there. What I'll have it in my hand. The only thing I have in my hand are the second readings for the meeting.
But on the agenda, since we're talking about budget things and money, there's seven different items
mm-hmm.
concerning the Huntington Sanitary Board.
Well, those are probably going to be withdrawn. The new director, interim director, had run across some things and thought that those needed to be approved by council, and they've already been approved by council. So I'll find out a little bit more, but the city attorney called me a couple hours ago and informed me that these really got on the agenda and shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get a better explanation as to each one and pull them off. But these are things that have already supposedly been approved
okay.
by council and don't need...
Well, Bobby, I'm not sure if it was in your administration or mine that the council of that time, whatever year that was, was very interested in getting control of the sanitary board's financial issues, particularly mm-hmm. any purchases that they might make. And I just wonder whether or not that is really necessary. I mean,
well, I believe there was a lawsuit. I'm sorry, she asked you that question.
That's all right. That's right.
Bobby's used to somebody jumping right in on him.
That's all right. Just call me Mark.
Okay, Mark.
Well, they're. I don't know if you remember A.E. McCaskey.
Very well. Yeah.
They back then, the sanitary board was like a world of its own. They had statutory authority and all, and the city. Although the mayor, I think even today is
the chairman.
The chairman.
Mm-hmm.
But we had the city manager back then and all that. And when I came on, we tried to get a handle on just what their budget was, what was going on. In the meantime, there hadn't been an increase in its sanitary fee in eons, and hasn't been. I don't know if there have been any. Was there any in your
not that I recall.
None in mine.
Was,
I don't know.
It was a 23% increase, I believe it was, in 2009.
In fees?
In the fee, right.
Mm-hmm. Because that's why we were falling behind on the infrastructure. We there weren't the revenues weren't coming in, even though the little bit coming in was earmarked. But I think the combination of the storm sewer problem, the landfill and all that, you needed to get someone in who really knows, and y'all have done that because the feds have been riding us for years, not only on the landfill, but our storm sewer. Mm-hmm. So this, I thought maybe those are items on the agenda to clarify some of that with the new person that you brought in, but apparently
no. No, that's not. And Gene, on the spending, the sanitary board doesn't fall under the $15,000 spending limit. They're under a $25,000 spending limit, and I've met with Sherry Wilkins, and she's our new stormwater director, and they're working on a long range plan. She says, you know, obviously we have an old infrastructure that needs a lot of work, and I had a wonderful conversation with her a couple of days ago, and you know. My thought is we take small bites of the apple, and we have a goal, but we keep taking small bites of that apple. Eventually, you get to the core, so I believe that's we're going to start seeing some plans from her moving forward. I don't know what it will involve, whether it's a stormwater utility or exactly what will come forth, but.
It won't be under the auspices of the sanitary board, will it?
It would make sense for it to be. And so I think they're looking at all of that because the sanitary board obviously has equipment. Mm-hmm. They have personnel. It just makes sense for that to happen. I believe a few years ago under another administration that they separated the stormwater division from the sanitary board, and it has remained that way since. Mm-hmm. But it makes sense for that all to, you know, to go back together.
Yeah. Do you think the sanitary board is composed of three people right now? The mayor is chairman, and there are two other appointed members. Should the sanitary board be enlarged, maybe to five or to seven, and would that give them greater autonomy? Should it? I'm just asking your opinion on this.
You know, I haven't thought about it. The two members, the mayor is obviously by office, holds the chair, and the other two members are appointed by city council, so they're city council's representatives. Mm-hmm. So the city council actually would have a little more weight on the board that way than it would be if you, you know, had more people involved. I think we have a good board, and we've had several good board members in the past that have served, but I think we have Gary.
And they have to fill certain occupations. One has to be a CPA or an accountant, and the other has to be an engineer.
Actually, it's not that way anymore. It's
not that way? Mm-hmm. Okay.
We always had, at least when I was there, we had at least an engineer on the board. In addition to AE, there was another one, but a lot of this has to do with a suit that the city has been dealing with from the feds over the fact that some of these facilities are requirements of both state and federal have not been met in a consistent way, and we're behind. And I think by bringing on a new person, making some changes, that the potential fine has been reduced somewhat, but you're still on the hook to get some things done within a timely fashion.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, we were on the hook for $164,000. Yeah. That was reduced to a $15,000 mm-hmm. cash fine, which was paid. And then there were supplemental environmental projects, or SEPs, mm-hmm. as they call them, that we had to commit to. And recently we approved a couple of rain gardens,
mm-hmm.
One at A.D. Lewis and one at Kellogg Elementary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we were committed that we had to, you know, there was dollars we had to commit to spend out of the general fund budget, and we've been doing that.
Well, what is so infuriating is that the federal government says to the municipalities, you must do this. They do not allow us any money to do it with.
Unfunded mandate.
Well, it's because we don't do it in the first place with the funds that we have.
Well, because we don't have the funds in the first place.
Well, then you have to cut back the program or raise the funds. I think we ought to be thankful that we do have some federal help, but they mm-hmm. do require a certain
minimum. I forgot,
minimums.
Bobby, you're an environmentalist.
That's right, A plus. I like to breathe clean air and drink clean water and chase deer. Two-legged type.
Right. Two-legged or four-legged? Oh, well, that's enough of that.
Wait a minute. There are many hard licks here. His time's already up. Got him in here, pulled him away from his busy party.
Listeners, we are coming up to the bottom of the hour. We will have news, and then I believe and hope that we will be joined by Delegate Don Perdue, and we can ask him some hard questions, Bobby.
You're listening to Tri-State Viewpoint on Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
Hey, welcome back to Tri-State Viewpoint. We have a number of people that come in from time to time. We invite them in, and we just had the chairman of Huntington City Council. Now we have another guest of Gene's, and he is well known in Charleston, Gene, and
absolutely.
In Wayne County.
And, absolutely. Yeah. He is joining us by telephone right now, and that's Delegate Don Perdue, who not only is a delegate from Wayne County, but also is the Director of Development in Wayne County. And Don, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Very good, Gene. Thank you. Found a place to park here at a rest area so they call in.
Okay, well, that's good. Okay. So, number of things that we certainly want to talk to you about, and some of them may be a little bit controversial here, but first of all, of course, everything we hear this week is all about the glitches on the Affordable Care Act, and I know that you, as the chairman of the Health and Human Services Committee in Charleston, some of this must have leaked over to you in the sense of how do you feel that the Affordable Care Act is going in the state of West Virginia? Do you think we're doing okay?
You know, I have to tell you, the latest report I've got is we got right at 60,000 people who signed up on the Medicaid expansion. That's the good news. The exchange, though, however, is not doing nearly as well. The last figures I've got are somewhere between 200 and 300 have actually successfully been able to get in and purchase insurance. But part of the problem there is that it's hard to gather all of the information from various sources as far as who has actually signed up. Now, in a month or so, maybe a little less, we'll be able to quantify exactly how many people have signed up, but right now it's very difficult. As you know, we decided in our wisdom to become a federal partner. Kentucky decided to create their own exchange. Kentucky has signed up many thousands of people on the exchange so far. So in our wisdom, if you want to call it that, we probably were the predictors of our own demise.
Go ahead, Bobby.
Yeah, I want to comment on that, Delegate Perdue. That turns out to be a bad decision because we don't have a state exchange. We'll have to operate through the federal exchange, and that, or at least the federal enrollment process. And as you pointed out, and Gene did, they've had some real problems with the rollout. Although I watched a congressional hearing today, and they had the companies that were involved in that, and they're working night and day. There's more than just one or two things, but it looks like it's going to get off the ground. But Don, was that a mistake? Why didn't we go the exchange route and have a state exchange like Kentucky's doing?
First of all, that was a mistake. A number of us thought it was a mistake when we did it. What happened was we actually were ahead of the state of Kentucky a year or so ago, or maybe a little longer. And then we decided that we were afraid of the word Obama. And so we just sat down, literally just sat down. And that's very frustrating for me, but, you know, it was at a pay grade a little above my own, and, you know, there wasn't much we could do.
But that was a decision really by the administration, right, by the governor and his cabinet people.
That's correct. His advisors apparently convinced him that the best thing to do was to take the exchange route. And now in hindsight, of course, hindsight's always 20/20. But in hindsight, there were folks that were saying that wasn't a good idea, and it's looking like right now it probably wasn't.
So the legislature members, whether the Senate or the House, you really didn't have any say in this.
No. If we had tried to do something legislatively at that particular point in time, if you may recall, we weren't even in session when these decisions were being made. So it was almost impossible to if we had have chosen to do anything. And I would submit that would have been a remote possibility anyway.
Yeah. Well, Don, the state also drug its feet on expanding Medicaid coverage to, as you pointed out, how many thousands of people are now in it, but they took a long study, and at the last minute, I think all this leads to the fact that within the administration, the opposition to Obamacare, which is pretty prevalent, and the general conservative approach to things by Governor Tomlin, led to finally getting into Medicaid, which is good, but on the failure to have an exchange and very little, I'm seeing very little publicity, even on some of the state programs where it's CHIP or a number of the others from our health agencies there. You're the chairman. I noticed, I think Delegate Misha Poore yesterday got upset that the health department is not getting information out on how people can either enroll or some of the other programs that are available. Do you share that view that Delegate Poore enunciated?
Yeah, it's unfortunate, Bobby, because the state agencies followed the administration's lead to the extent that we just sat down. And so some planning that needed to be done was not done. And it's pointless at this stage to really, direct any great animosity to anybody. But, you know, now that the thing is done, it's been the law for some time. But now that what's done is done, then we should be doing what we should be doing. And in many respects, we are. I have to say that the governor, by taking so much time to decide to expand Medicaid, actually did us a favor because it gave the Medicaid folks the opportunity to put together a package that could get us to be the number one state in the country per capita in Medicaid signups. And that, you know, to that degree, it was actually helpful.
Well, that's true, but you already had pretty much a identification of those who either had Medicaid and those who are eligible to be covered by expansion.
Yeah.
So you could do that right away. That was a piece of cake, and while it took them a good time to do it, it was a good move. But we have, according to information I have, 270,000 West Virginians who don't have any health coverage. And
that's correct.
And according to this article that was both in the Gazette and New York Times, West Virginia would benefit from the Affordable Care Act more than any other state because of the number of people
that's absolutely correct.
I noticed it didn't even they just had interim meetings, and I noticed it didn't even come up very much there. Our legislative and executive people don't seem to understand what's going on in the real world when it comes to this program. I'm not blaming you. You're out in California somewhere.
Sure. I have to use the static. That's a true story. Jimmy Kimmel, you may have heard of this. Jimmy Kimmel had a guy out in the street a few weeks ago, and he was asking people if they liked Obamacare or not. Oh, no, we can't stand Obamacare. Well, what do you think of the Affordable Care Act? Now, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
So you know, all you had to do is associate the name Obama, and automatically there were a number of people that immediately, either out of fear, out of political fear, or out of pure animosity, just recoiled. But if you take that word out of the equation, oh, my goodness, it's a good idea.
Don't you think, Don? Don't you think that from the very beginning that this national health care program could have been made much, much simpler would not be nearly so confusing. I mean, all this talk about exchanges, and now I'm hearing, and I don't know how accurate this is. It's sort of one-sided, but I'm getting several emails. Of course, one of them came from teaparty.org, so who knows? Mm-hmm. But that people actually are losing their current insurance coverage. Is there any truth to that?
I think it's certainly possible. Because there are folks that maybe made some poor decisions based on what they thought was going to be available, and either canceled their insurance or didn't have enough information to make the move that they made. And I think that certainly is possible. I also believe, and firmly believe, that given say 2 to 3 months, many of those things will be ironed out. In those situations, that if they do exist, at least there will be a rational reason for it. Something other than to say, oh, the plan didn't work, or the software was bad, or somebody lied to me. I think that given a few months, I think those things will largely disappear.
Don, I want to bring up a controversial subject, but can you stay with us for a couple of minutes while we put some commercials
certainly.
On the air? Okay.
Sure, certainly.
All right. Delegate Don Perdue is our guest, and he's calling in from his trip home. And, Bobby, we'll take a short commercial break here, and then we'll get back into our conversation with him. And remember, listeners, if you'd like to ask him a question or make a statement, we are here at 304-399-8255 or 1-877-420-8255. This is Tri-State Viewpoint with Bobby Nelson and Gene Dean on Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
Now, back to Tri-State Viewpoint on Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
Hey, welcome back to Tri-State Viewpoint. Our guest is Delegate Don Perdue, who's the chairman of the Health and Human Services Committee, I believe, in the state legislature. One of the good guys up there, and somebody on health information, which is a big issue today, Gene. I'm glad to have a guy like Delegate Perdue up
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely, and I'm sure we're going to get back to that, too. But I've got a little question here that is no doubt going to be controversial, and I'm hearing that it's coming up again, whether or not it'll make it onto the legislative floor. What I'm talking about, Don, is gay marriage, and I'm hearing that there's a movement to bring it before the legislature. You know anything about that?
We always hear that kind of talk, Gene, especially in an election year. It is a wedge issue. It will always be a wedge issue, particularly in some places, and I have no doubt that there will be legislation introduced and pressure put on to do something with it. But I also believe that people over the years have become a great deal more discerning about exactly what rises to the level of a constitutional amendment, because I think that's what we're talking about here. And I think that I have no doubt it will become a cause to live for a while. I also have a strong belief that this more moderate voices will be heard and will prevail.
Is it one of those subjects that gets introduced just about every year, but unfortunately or fortunately, depending on your viewpoint, it doesn't go anywhere?
That's exactly right. However, I will tell you that the year that we passed the Defense of Marriage Act, which it looks as though it's under challenge now, the year that that was passed, there was a lot of discussion about going for the constitutional amendment then. But while they could talk about the an act of the legislature, not very many people had a real big taste for something as large or as broadly construed as a constitutional amendment.
It just strikes me that nationwide there is more favorability to approving gay marriage now, and while that may not be the case in West Virginia, it is giving, I think, a larger scope to bring it maybe even to the floor.
That's possible, certainly. I think that, across this nation, that issue is starting to get a lot more discussion, and the ramifications of it are becoming more better understood. So, yeah, it's going to maintain its position on the highest level of discussion. But will it get to the point where that discussion is carried forward to action? That just remains to be seen.
Hey, Don, I want to get back again to the Affordable Care Act, and we have a few minutes ago. Something happened just yesterday where the administration announced that the sign-up period for the first period would be extended through March 31st as opposed to the December 31st, and that persons who sign up after the first of the year up until March would not have to have the penalty if you haven't signed up. They've
right.
extended that. And
right.
I watched the hearings a little bit today. They have an oversight hearing mainly by the Republicans who are trying to undermine this. And I thought there were a couple points made they've been trying to get going all the way back. One person said all the way back to Teddy Roosevelt, but certainly back to Nixon, when there was something of providing some kind of health insurance for every citizen. And, of course, you've had the gamut from universal care, which didn't get anywhere, to private programs and all. And here we are today, and the Republicans defunded it 40 some times. They sent bills over to the Senate that didn't get anywhere. Now with this glitch that has come along, they're trying to get at Obamacare again by pointing that out. But the experts that were there yet today, Gene, the people who helped put this together, say that the sheer complexity of this, the size, create much more than they thought. And the initial hits, 20-some million right off the bat, but they couldn't get in maybe 1%
right,
of them.
Right.
But the other thing they point out, Don, that you might comment on, they assume that all states would establish exchanges, and that would make it a lot easier, but only about, 17 states or more did that. And so you have all these others that did not, so that fell on the government. So they're not getting the states involved to the extent that they thought, which is another problem, because then you have a separate entity now dealing with each of these states in addition to the... So
it is just ultra-complicated.
It is, but it...
It is.
Go ahead, Don.
As Bobby said earlier, Gene, it didn't need to be that way.
Right,
but
right.
Because there were so many special interests and, frankly, so many Republican objections raised back when we first started talking about this, that in trying to get through that maze, we probably didn't leave enough kernels of corn behind us to find our way back. And it's unfortunate, and it's actually very lamentable that we made something so complicated, so ridiculously complicated, that now we're starting to see the results of that, and yet we want to blame the very people who had nerve enough and persistence enough to get through that maze. So it's just very frustrating.
Yeah, you know, Gene, what's interesting, the people who very much opposed to Obamacare and wanted to kill it are now upset because they're not getting it worked out. I mean, but I think it's going to take some time, but we've never done this on this scale before, so they're going to be, you know, you got to tweak it and you got to work on it, but there are those who have been against it from the beginning, just want to kill it. And as one person said today at the hearing, don't nix it, fix it.
Yeah, I like that.
Point. You know, Bobby, all is the most important document in the history of the United States is our Constitution. We've amended it 27 times.
Mm.
Now, if anybody thinks that we were not going to amend something or change something as large as this is, of course we were. We were always going to have to do that. We have to accept the fact that there's more work to be done. You know, there's no way to turn a switch and have the lights come on and stay on forever without doing somebody down the road putting that electricity into the overhead lines. So that just has to, it's a continuing effort. It's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a word that Gene, you and I have been saying, or I've been saying, we both agree, just be patient.
Yeah.
Be patient. This thing will be worked out, and that's all, because it is a massive... But you look at the benefit. That's what
you
ought to be looking at instead of ways to block. That's what's hard to understand. And a lot of people think that this is another government program. These exchanges will be contracted through private insurance companies. So
that's what's so hard to understand, the involvement of the government and the private sector. Oh, goodness.
Well, they don't want the government in, because the general Republican philosophy is least government is best government. That's at the heart of this. Plus, they don't like the president. That's another problem.
I know it's totally impossible, but if I had my way, we'd scrap the whole thing, go back to square one.
And single payer.
Yeah.
Single, that's what was proposed, but it didn't get off the ground. They were against that, too.
I don't think Canada, and I know the UK, didn't have problems like this when they put in their national health care.
Because universal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So... Well, Don, we really appreciate you joining us today, because you know a whole lot more than we do about all this, and we appreciate your comments.
I appreciate that, and I'm learning more and more about less and less every day.
Well, you take care, Don.
Don, that'll turn you into a statesman. Hey, thank you, Delegate Perdue. Have a safe trip home.
Sure.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, thank you.
Where was he in...
Did
you know where he's coming from? Because he's on the road, and that was nice.
Yeah, he's coming from Cleveland.
From Cleveland?
Yeah.
I know he's at a conference somewhere.
Yeah.
But, I wanted to mention this before you go, that they now have extended the sign-up period, that if you sign up,
yeah,
you're actually enrolled, and if you do it the end of March as opposed
mm-hmm.
to the end of December,
right,
and that you won't be penalized. The other thing that the president said in his press conference yesterday, we finally identified these companies. You were trying to...
Yeah, I heard
that. CGI is...
Who's
the,
responsible?
The, mm-hmm. Well, they basically said what we have put together works, but there were changes as we went along the way, which mm-hmm. caused the... And then you have the security thing, as we mentioned, because
mm-hmm.
you got all these insurance companies around the world, all the information on you and me and all. So all of that has to be considered.
And we're even spying on the French and Chancellor Merkel of Germany. So, yeah,
so if we can do that, we can fix our health problems.
And by the way, listeners, I get emails from all over the place, and one you might want to check out, and I kind of enjoy looking at it, is simply teaparty.org. It may raise your hackles a little bit.
Yeah.
But anyway, thanks for listening to us today. We'll be back with you tomorrow, and we'll have new subjects to talk about. Needless to say, we'll be on political lines, as always, and we hope that you'll give us a call. We do appreciate your calls very, very much. Our guests today have been, as you just heard, Delegate Don Perdue and also Huntington City Councilman Chair Mark Bates. We're going to make way now for news and our sports guys, but we'll be back with you tomorrow afternoon. Thanks so much for listening. Ta-ta for now.
The John Boy and Billy Big Show, mornings 6 to 10 on Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930 WRBC Huntington.